This is Dee Blick. Welcome to Lead Well, Live Well for UK Health Radio. Hello and a warm welcome to Lead Well, Live Well with me, Dee Blick, on UK Health Radio, the world's biggest talk health radio station. Now in the studio today, I have a fabulous businessman. He's a renowned entrepreneur because he's built a national brand that is one of the most loved and trusted in a highly competitive sector. So a warm welcome to today's show, Dan Robson Scarborough.
Thank you very much. Pleased to be here.
It's lovely to have you. Now, we're going to start with a really hard-hitting question. Mm-hmm. You know, you're a hugely respected entrepreneur. You started a business from scratch and you built it using the franchise model. Is it 65 franchises you've got?
That's right.
From zero to 65 franchisees in 2 years, which is just absolutely staggering. So my first hard-hitting question for you has to be, tell me all about Winston, your little French bulldog.
Our team mascot. He is the character that keeps us afloat, really, because aside from keeping my feet warm when it's cold, he looks at me with these eyes that makes me think, and he'd take you for a walk and take a refresh and reset. So he sort of helps us stay sane.
We've got a little Frenchie in the family, and I just think they're the most loyal little. They're so ridiculous looking that they're just utterly cute, aren't they?
I've seen
Winston on quite a few calls, because obviously I interviewed your other half, Kat, about your man with a van, your franchise.
That's right.
And Winston makes regular appearances, but they're such loyal little dogs, aren't they?
They are indeed, yeah. And they like to snore a lot. So you hear them in the meetings quite often.
I know. I mean, I've had a few meetings where people have actually said to me, is there something snoring there? Because they can see that quite clearly I'm not snoring. And it's actually my son's little Frenchie, Smithy, that I have for the day. And I forget, and he's snoring on the floor. And you just forget about all the snuffles and noises they make, don't you?
The little piggies.
Yeah, they are little piggies. Of course, I haven't usually... This is the first time I think I've started my show by talking about French bulldogs, but it just had to be done on this occasion. And so now I'm going to take you back to business. Mm-hmm. Your man with a van, what a success story. This incredible, hugely loved franchise. You've got so many fabulous reviews on Google, but it began, as most incredible businesses do, in the most simple of ways. Can you share your origin story?
Yeah, of course. It's interesting, actually. I didn't pick to necessarily be a man with a van at first. I was at university and I still love music and events and gigging and doing discos and stuff like that, and had a small sound system that needed moving from location to location for the different discos. Needed a van, got a van. And then inevitably at uni, friends and I guess fellow students wanted help moving across town and back home and so on. And I remember one of my friends saying, you know, you could do this. This could be a little side hustle.
Yeah.
Didn't expect it to evolve into the full-time role. And the, my discoing stuff was sort of took a bit of a back seat, really.
Yeah.
And so it just ended up being me building that man with a van business, simple business model. But what I found is the industry wasn't the nicest space, in the sense that there wasn't lots of good ones. There wasn't many good people in that space. A lot of kind of like duckers and divers. And I just thought, this needs to be gentrified. This needs to be professionalized. Let's try and fix the industry one van at a time. It sort of started with me just wanting to provide great service for my customers, but it evolved into, wow, we need to fix this industry. And the only way to do that is a franchise. Making me one company really big only fixes a small chunk of it, maybe like a county worth. And I felt that there's a nationwide problem here that needs to be fixed. So franchising was the only way to go.
But what did you study at university?
Music.
Music. So it could have, I just wondered that that is one heck of a pivot. And that's a real mindset shift that you are taking stuff across from gig to gig in a van. That's a huge mind shift from I'm studying a degree in music. I'm just shifting my stuff from A to B. I'll give my mates and suddenly I'm going to gentrify and launch this business. That what was there any, a defining moment when you just thought, I'm not going to go into music as a career, however that may have presented, but I'm going to go into gentrifying the whole van removal industry?
Well, I mean, one of the big ones is that the music industry is very cutthroat. And actually, I did university. Not a lot of people go to university because they want to pursue a career and they need the qualification. I went to university really to have a good time and to have that time away from home and you know, just do what everyone else did, really. And so I discovered that music was something I had a passion for and didn't want to make it a job. Or didn't want to make it into a career. So my parents are both sort of business owners, so entrepreneurial family, a couple of generations back. So it wasn't anything new to start an idea. But yeah, I didn't necessarily think of Man with the Van until I was at uni and someone said to me that. And I thought, yeah, that's actually a really good idea. And just went with it, paid for like the last half of my final year at uni. And then I stayed in Cambridge for another year before moving back to Hertfordshire, where I was originally from.
I mean, gosh, that's great. I mean, was it that saying the fruit doesn't fall far from the tree, that you say you're in an entrepreneurial family? And I say sometimes that can influence you, but often parents don't necessarily talk around the table about their vision and their values and their business. Were you brought up in a sort of a family where it was spoken about, in essence, that it rubbed off on you?
Interestingly, no. But my parents were sort of very hardworking and very driven people, but they wouldn't really bring the business home so much. So, you know, I found my parents inspiring, but not in the way that you'd sort of expect. They weren't like giving me loads of fancy business quotes or anything, or, you know, we didn't really talk numbers for a long time. It's only in the recent years that I sort of sat down with Dad and had a man-to-man conversation about business direction. You know, it was very much just throw enough mud at the wall and hope some of it sticks kind of attitude. And you know, both my parents did very well. I mean, my dad had a garden machinery retail and service business. My mum was a jeweler, a Guildfellows jeweler. So the two of them were very sort of like influential, but more just because I was brought up around that rather than like showing me the way. They still let me make all the mistakes.
I just love the fact that, and as a marketer, you know, when I listen to people talking about their origin story, I love the fact that you said you wanted to gentrify. We've got a couple of minutes to the break and I want you to expand on that. So that implies to me that you did your research for you to be able to arrive at a conclusion that the sector you were going into needed gentrifying. And could you share a bit more about that?
Yeah, I've got to be careful what I say because I don't want to offend people. But no. Typically in the removals, man and van, their standards are very low. And it was I felt it was a real shame. I felt like there's a massive gap in the market to fix that. But I thought it was just a real shame that people didn't take the same pride as maybe, you know, a good plumber will really care about their pipework and a good electrician will care about how the wires are laid and so on and so on. Obviously, there's always a cowboy in every industry, but I felt like Man with a Van had a massive amount of poor quality, like almost larger percentage low quality than there was good quality. So I felt like it was an opportunity to fix that. I can do well at the same time by developing my account. So, yeah.
I really admire that. And when I speak to businesses, you know, I'm a marketer, I talk about doing the basics brilliantly. And a big thing is looking at what's going on around you in terms of competitors. And you can say, well, yep, the service is being delivered, but the way in which it is being delivered, it falls short. And so I really admire the fact that you were able to look with clarity at a sector and think, I can't just do better, but I'm going to do better. So we're going to go to the first break now. Then after the break, don't go away, because I'm going to be talking to Dan about how he built a business from being a solopreneur to franchising it and how he went about it.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
What if your healing journey could feel empowering, hopeful, even transformative? Welcome to the Alkaline Collective Mastermind, a community for anyone facing cancer, staying cancer-free, or committed to prevention. No matter your stage, whether you've chosen conventional care, an integrative path, or a fully holistic approach, here, you're not alone. Here, your healing journey becomes a journey of empowerment. We explore the science of oxygenation, metabolism, and alkalinity, while strengthening your emotional, spiritual, and physical well-being. This is a mastermind with heart, accountability, connection, wisdom, and real support. Because your journey isn't just about surviving, it's about thriving. Join us by clicking on the Alkaline Collective Mastermind banner on the UK Health Radio homepage or directly at alkaline-collective.com, where self-belief grows, healing deepens, and transformation begins.
Somewhere on Earth, there are 4 acres that belong to you. You don't need to be there in person, only there in purpose, protecting it, defending it, keeping it alive. Because the world doesn't need more good intentions. It needs more meaningful actions. Register your interest at 4acresearth.com.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back to Lead Well, Live Well with me, Dee Blick, and I've got the fabulous Dan Robson Scarborough, the co-founder of the Your Man with a Van franchise, in the studio today. Now, Dan, I know as a marketer that building a successful business as a solopreneur is one thing. You know, we can all build a great little business that ticks over, pays the mortgage, actually makes us decent money. But actually franchising it, that is huge. And I want to try and get to the root of what made you realize, or what made you decide, I actually think I can franchise this business, and then we'll talk about how you went about it.
Yeah, sure. Well, it wasn't easy by any means, and we did a lot of sort of research and consulting work. We worked with some consultants at the beginning to learn what needs to be in the documentation. Yeah, it wasn't easy, but what we found was that the franchise space. I felt like the book kind of needed a bit rewriting as well there, but I don't want to get too into that. We decided that we had something that was simple enough to replicate. That was a really important point, that the business was simple enough to replicate. You can't franchise any business. Some of them are too complicated. Some of them are focused on like the owner being the reason why it's successful. But I felt with ours, it was simple enough and, you know, could be replicated. And we did pilot it before we franchised. So we did, you know, move to another location. You know, I went from Hertfordshire to Dorset, piloted another version. I ran the Dorset one. Someone else ran my previous Hertfordshire one. I gave them full autonomy to like do it how they wanted, to see if it would continue and not fall flat. And it did. Yeah. It worked. And someone was able to run it fine. And we learned a lot. We tested a few things, you know, asked questions, changed things about, see how that would affect that person's opinion of their business, etc. A bit of a guinea pig kind of strategy. And when we found that that worked and it was successful, we thought, okay, can we find someone else in Dorset to start the next one? And then we kind of got a second pilot, and by that point we're like, yeah, this is going to be a franchise, this will work, we can franchise this. Then went down the consulting route. How do you produce all the documentation? We got through a journey of building a massive, like typical franchise with all the thing, all the bells and whistles, all the documentation, operations manuals, etc. And then we realized at the like crunch time of about to sell it, it was like, doesn't feel right. This doesn't feel right. This isn't like how we want to do it. So we scrapped all of our work in the last year's work, all of it, just scrapped it all, started again. And we did some things that are very different to your typical franchise. For one, we're not locking you into a 5-year term. It's a 30-day rolling contract. You can leave if you're not happy. It puts the onus on us to provide you value so you don't. And things like that, you know, we're not overly expensive. It's quite a affordable buy-in, makes it accessible to pretty much anyone. We just want the right people to join. Yeah, it was so franchising is a big subject, and I could go down a whole hour on just that.
Yeah.
But we did things a bit differently, and we went against the grain. Not to be big headed too much, we won quite a few awards last year because of being different. So I'm confident we can scale it to a full coverage.
What I like about what you've just shared there is, and that to me is a true almost maverick entrepreneur, is that you trod the path that others had trod before you in terms of ticking the boxes of what it takes to franchise. And I've got quite a lot of experience in franchising. I've franchised a business, and I've also gone into businesses that have been franchise, and I've really boosted the marketing because that's been a big area where the business owner, the franchisor, has been totally bereft. But what I liked is the fact that you went down that well-trodden path and you had the courage to pull the plug and say, this isn't our vision, this is not how we like to go. And it would have been so easy for you to have continued going down that route. And I don't doubt you would have been successful. I doubt you would have been anywhere near as successful as you are now. And I just want to take you back before all this, the decision to franchise. Did you just have this eureka moment? I mean, you're like this young man who's bought a van, you're suddenly then transporting your mates stuff, and you think, I'm going to have a van removal business, I'm going to move stuff and do it really well, and I'm going to gentrify things. And was there a eureka moment when you thought, I can franchise this business that I have built here?
Do you know what? It's funny, actually. So about 2 years in, so obviously we didn't franchise till we were about 13 and a half years in. It's quite a way. We didn't, you know, built it to a very big business before we franchised. But about 2 years in, I found the domain name, the perfect domain name, which kind of defined Your Man with a Van. So like our origin story takes back 2010, but Your Man with a Van officially like got the domain name, and kind of I could just see the franchise in that. I was like, that name, yourmanwithavan.com, I mean, that's a franchise right there. I knew that then, but it took me another 10 and 11 years or so to really have the courage to do it. And at that point, I could have easily have gone down the route of just making a big removal firm. But as I say, because I felt that the industry needed gentrifying, it was like, I have to do this. It's not a case of want to, it's more I have to do this for the greater good.
I think that's
why it works so well.
I love that, because when you've got that burning ambition, it takes over everything. And I love the fact, it's interesting what you're saying, because I'm involved in a big publishing. I'm publishing my first print magazine, 100 pages. And my mission is purpose and passion over profit. I always go for things that I've got a really strong purpose, I'm passionate, and money is not my main driver. And ironically, when you don't make money your main driver, you seem to do okay. But I've always been the same as a businesswoman. I've always wanted to do things that I can see a gap that exists, and I want to go in there and deliver something better for everybody. But what I also love is that you really established proof of concept before you franchised your business. And I have many years' experience, as I say, being in franchising. And it was always quite clear to me the businesses that had dived into franchising without really, you know, they'd gone down the route of the consultants and, like you said, they ticked all the boxes, but they hadn't been established long enough to know what the major pitfalls were. They have, you know, so it's great, you know, oh, I've been established for 4 years, I can franchise this, and it might be the case, but I think that you've got to have weathered lots of storms, gone through lots of different economic landscapes before you can truly say to a person, hand on heart, this model works in all temperatures, in all climates. We know what it's like when it's really successful. But I think the one thing that you probably agree with me on this one is that it teaches you resilience, it teaches you adaptability. So as a business owner, you're able to say to franchisees, guys and gals, we know it's tough at the moment, but these are ways in which we can pivot and still have a successful business. If you've not weathered those storms, you're selling hope. And I don't. And I really admire the fact that you went through all this big learning curve and then decided, you know what, we're going to franchise. And we've got a minute to the break, and I'd love it if you could just come back on that a little bit and what I've just waffled on about there.
Well, interesting, one of the things that stands out, whether it's relevant so much, it's just that franchising is a new business. Like you've got one business that works. If you franchise, you've got a new business that you have no proof is going to work. You've got to start again. And that's a really difficult journey to be on, but it's still having the conviction this is going to work. Make sure you have that conviction and just make it work, whatever happens. You know, yeah, we can touch on it later. So.
I think as well that, just speaking from experience, that your franchisees respect you because they know that you've got, I call it your, you know, the stripes on your shoulder that show. I've been into battle. I've seen, you know, peace times, I've seen battle, and I've emerged unscathed, but I've got a heck of a story to share. And I think so much about great franchising is lessons learned and being relatable, so that when a franchisee is going through a tough time, you can absolutely empathize with them, because in that period of time that you were building your business solo, there's nothing that a franchisee can deliver to you that will make you go, gosh, I've never heard about that before.
Yeah, absolutely. Couldn't agree more.
Right, we're now moving to the second break. And after the break, I'm going to be talking to Dan about being a positive disruptor and also talking about his fabulous wife, who I interviewed, Catriona, or I call her Cat or Kitty Cat, mum of Winston, as I also refer to her. But we're going to be talking about how Dan is a positive disruptor, where it came from, and how he works with his wife, Cat.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
What if your worst dreams aren't your enemy?
Falling, cheating, being chased, naked, drowning, losing teeth. What if I fail? What if something goes wrong?
I'm Teresa Chung, dream expert, best-selling author, and co-host of The Healing Power of Your Dreams. And in my latest title, Extreme Dreaming, I reveal a powerful truth. There are no bad dreams.
They feel so real, but that's so you remember them.
They're messages, signals, transformative gifts guiding you toward clarity.
Click on the Extreme Dreaming discount banner link on UK Health Radio homepage and learn to decode even your darkest dreams.
Extreme Dreaming.
Are you ready to listen?
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back to Lead Well, Live Well with me, Dee Blick, and I'm talking to Dan today, and it's all about franchising and this incredible vision that he had as a young man, you know, hiring a van. Next thing you know, he's completed his degree and he's built this hugely successful business. Then he franchises it, he tears up the rule book and decides that he's going to do it in a different way. So, Dan, what that says to me is that you are a positive disruptor, which I hugely admire. Where did this spirit of disruption come from? Has it always been within you?
I think so, yeah. I think it goes back a generation. So my grandfather was an inventor, and he invented all sorts of wonderful gizmos and some very exciting things. He won the Queen's Export Award for building some incredible machinery at one time in his life. And so he was my inspiration for thinking outside the box. Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, I agree. There's thinking outside the box, but it sounds to me that you've got this resilience that it's not easy to, as you said before the break, it's not easy to invest a whole load of money in going down this well-trodden path and then say, nope, I'm not going to do that. That takes a lot of courage, but it's also a spirit of defiance and disruption. So would you describe yourself as a disruptor, a positive disruptor?
Yeah, absolutely. But it feels a bit of a shame that I am the disruptor of this, because our approach is to make it fair, to make it honest, make it genuine. So like, it's a win-win model with what we do. Typically, not all, but typically franchising is franchisor gets wealthy, franchisee gets a job with no benefits.
Yes.
Our model is to make it fair. It's win-win. We work together as a team. Effectively, they're my boss, not the other way around.
Wow.
And because of that win-win mentality, we created a very passionate, focused, model. And I just feel like the entire franchise industry needs a shake-up because, as I say, prior to us doing it, it was just cookie-cutter, do it the same as everyone else. And it might work for McDonald's, but it doesn't necessarily mean it works for an oven cleaning business.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I think often it takes a person to come along, and I'm finding this now. I'm actually working with a franchisor who I've known for a long time, really great guy. And he's built this franchise model, but the one area that he's overlooked is ongoing support and mentoring for the franchisees. And so he's almost bringing me in to do a bit of retrofitting because he can see that. And also I think it leads to franchisee underperformance, that if franchisees don't feel nurtured and looked after, and if they feel dispirited, that impacts on their performance. And I've always thought, this is like when you're building your brand, it's great to get lots of franchisees in through the door, but they can just as easily go out of the other door if you're not supporting them. And so it's sound business acumen to support your franchisees as much as you possibly can, because it leads to a more spirited network. And of course, it ensures that more people come on board, because what does a potential franchisee do? They chat to the existing franchisees. And so I think everybody wins, which I really admire you for having this spirit. And I want to talk now about Kat, your wife. Now, I interviewed Kat and I know her really well, and she's as equally passionate about being disruptive and really looking after your franchisees. She's one of the most gorgeous, warm-hearted humans that I've had the pleasure of getting to know on a deeper level. And her passion for supporting your franchisees, it radiates through. So I want to know is, how do you complement one another? What does Kat do and what do you do, and where do you overlap?
Well, we have different skill sets for sure. And so we don't clash too much. I'm more of the sort of talking to the branch owner, like maybe the new prospects. I'm, I guess, front of house. Typically, they want to speak to me. I mean, we have women in the organization as well, but it's sort of typically male focused, and they generally want to talk to me. So I'm just tends to be the front of house, the first port of call. But Kat's amazing at the administrative stuff, and she writes incredibly well. So all of our documentation, all of our sort of franchise agreements, the legal stuff, which, I find really difficult to do, she's just amazing at. So all the sort of trade reporting and the data analyst stuff that we do every week, providing our weekly and monthly and annual trade reports for our branches, she does all of that. I just couldn't do that. My brain's just not wired that way. So we complement each other because we have different skill sets, for sure.
Yes.
Doesn't mean to say that we don't disagree. We disagree an awful lot, but for the better of the brand. And generally it's me going, yes, dear, and just do as I'm told.
you know what side Rob Brady is best posted on. And I just want to ask, before we talk a bit about how you work together, I find it astonishing that this is not just in 5 years, it's in 2 years you have gone from naught to 65 franchisees, which absolutely blows my mind, because that is a huge... How have you done that? because you can't just put the A board up and hope that they'll come. You've got to be really tenacious and active. How have you done that in 2 years? Have you had really expensive consultants to support you and spent thousands on websites? And
we did have some expensive consultants at the beginning, which included a level of marketing to get ourselves off the ground. So I guess to some extent it got the ball rolling. But when we decided to scrap and start again, some of that traction may have been lost. A fair bit of money went in the bin for sure. But the growth, I think, really comes down to not overcharging for it. So having a fair price, a fair strategy that, you know, you can leave kind of thing. Ironically, nobody leaves because it's fair. You know, they're not locked into a term they can't get out of. We have good marketing. We are good at marketing. We support our branch owners with that, but we are very good at marketing. We typically run all of our advertising through Facebook. We get a lot of great traction on the website, which does generate inquiry, but really it's driven by, I mean, we're now at 60,000 followers on Facebook or something like that collectively. And that drives an awful lot of traffic. Yes. I don't remember. I seem to recall when we started, our like viewership was about 20,000 hits a year, and now it's at like 5 million. So It's just sort of, you know, getting your head around using these technologies and a lot of learning. And we use AI. AI has taught me a lot. I don't know. Some people use AI just to have a chat. I use AI to learn. It's an amazing tool for learning and self-development and understanding technologies. How do you use this? How do you use, just constantly asking questions that teach you something is what I use AI for. Yeah.
So tell me before we talk about if you're able to leave, talk about work at the door when you come home. Tell me a bit about the reviews, because this is something that Kat was sharing the other day. You've got an astonishing number of credit. Is it Google reviews? Am I right there? How many have you got now?
I ran the report this morning. I think it's 3,229. Quite a high number.
What percentage of that are like, you know, four and five stars?
Oh, well, like 99.9% is five star. I think we have like three bad reviews in the entire thing.
Wow, that is astonishing.
Like, really, on one hand, for sure.
Yeah. Isn't that just amazing that, because I always think as an author, I write books, and I'm always blessed that I've got many more five-star reviews, and the one stars I can count on one hand. And they don't half help in generating not just publicity, but also there's a validation of you being a great business, that if I was looking for a removal business, that's the first place I would go to, because the Google reviews don't lie, and you can't have 3,000 exemplary reviews and somehow you've been rigging the system. And I assume the reviews are from all over the UK, that your franchisees.
Yeah, so we give every branch their own Google listing, and we support, that's one of the ways that we control their quality. So we're, you know, these are genuine reviews. They're never pay for anything like that. Yeah. This is purely organic, genuine reviews. And if someone gets a bad review, it's when we step in, say, help them make sure that they turn it around. You know, how can you make that customer happy? So they give you a good review, or at least remove it. But also it's a way of like, oh goodness, we've got a branch here who's not performing.
Yes.
Like, this person needs some focus to get them back up to speed. But it doesn't happen very often. I mean, hand on heart, we've got a lovely community who come to us when they're not, you know, when they're struggling, or when, you know, it's not always, you know, perfect all the time. But we support everybody like they're our friends and colleagues rather than our, you know, customers. Yeah. And their success is our success fundamentally. So we want them to do really well. In a lot of cases, they do better than we do. But that's, as you were saying before, money's not the driver here. Like, the passion and the focus. I love what I do. It's, you're asking about bringing work home. I don't go to work. I love work. I love what we do. So it doesn't feel like work. It's the same. Yeah. Home and it's all one and the same.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I agree. I think if you love, there's that ubiquitous saying that if you love what you do, you know, you'll never have to work another day in your life. And that's certainly my maxim as well. And so you've got one thing that really came out to me, that obviously I've been following you on LinkedIn, is my social channel of choice. And there does seem to be this, I love reading about the franchisees, that you do get some of those franchisees. And I think recently you did a little video putting my book into the, not literally into the post, but enveloped an address, not just depositing.
Yes.
But you did this little campaign, which I didn't know about. And tell me about that, just to sort of give me a bit of a flutter.
A little piece. Well, I mean, we love your book. And I understand you've written a few, but I haven't read them all yet. But we were wanting to gee our branch owners up to go to networking meetings, because networking is like the most powerful tool to leverage word of mouth, which is a very difficult marketing channel. So we were like, come on, guys, get to networking meetings. Don't just rely on your Facebook ads. Don't just rely on your Google listings. Rely on you as a person. You've got a great energy about you. You've got a great brand. Walk into a meeting, hold your head high, and, you know, and get referrals, you know, build your business that way. And so we thought, how can we incentivize? So we got copies of your book. I think we bought like 20 copies, and then we posted them out to the branches that went to networking meetings, and we got quite a good response, which was great. And those that went had great feedback and got customers out of it, shared that with the community, which inspired more to do the same. We have a WhatsApp chat with all the branches on, so they all can help each other on a daily basis. Yeah.
I think definitely networking is a big thing. And I wanted to ask you, obviously, we're going through, in the UK, we're going through a tough time and people are not moving as often as they should. And so have you, I guess this goes back to this long-standing business model where you've weathered all economic storms. Are you having to support franchisees to look beyond? Because I was just thinking, your man with a van, it's not just removals, is it? You must do other types of...
No.
Removal as well, and are you having to get them to pivot and look more about expanding their offering, or is that already built into the model they buy?
Well, it's already built into the model, so I haven't necessarily need to pivot, but getting them their mindset to shift a little bit, because the removal industry is where the money is. There's a lot more money to be made with removals, you know, like flats, houses, offices. But markets can change, and, you know, with the global situation, it means that house prices, blah, blah, blah. It affects things in a way that removals slow down, whereas a man with a van can do business delivery, it can do item relocation, it can do, you know, get literally taking a sofa from one side of town to the other, waste clearance, all those sort of things. So quite often people chase the money. They see the removal money and think, wow, that's such great earnings. I want to just do that. Like, you know, we have to remind everybody, guys, the market is not always removals. If you need to elevate the other side of it so that you have the freedom to pick and choose what you do.
Yeah.
If the market goes against you, which it has done recently with, you know, the global situation, it's meant the removal market has slowed. So, of course, we're saying, guys, this is why you need to develop the whole picture, because your business delivery and your item relocation is what's going to save you through those quiet patches.
Yeah. I think as well that I'm sure that there are cases that where, for example, somebody uses your man with a van to move their sofa or pick up their flat pack kitchen, that they're more likely to recommend and also to use your man with a van when they're looking at the bigger moves. And so it's also
100%.
A great step 100%. In building their pipeline, isn't it? It's not just an economic, great, I've diversified from removal, but it's a great brand builder, isn't it?
100%. In fact, I would quite often argue that the odd sofa move is purely a marketing thing. It will only really break even as far as cost is concerned. You know, labour, fuel, insurance, mileage, all that sort of stuff. The £50 that you earn for moving a sofa is hardly profitable, but it's a customer that's seen how good you are and seen how friendly you are and how slick the branding looks. So then they're going, my gran is moving next month. I'm going to recommend them and not even bother going on Google and searching. I'm just going to give them your card.
Yeah.
So it's all about, you know, trust there. And yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So we're going to go back now to you and Kat. So I just love that. I could talk to you all day because I've got such a fascination with franchising and making franchising work. You know, I've spent a lot of my career, I've been dipping into supporting franchisors, and it really fascinates me. And I just love how your story is so enchanting in a way, which might sound like an unusual word. It's both enchanting and captivating. So how are you and Kat able to leave business at the door, or does it come home with you? So in between Snuffles and children, Snuffles being Winston, of course, I must just clarify that. Frenchy Cuddles and Snuffles and Little Ones. Do you find yourself talking shop?
Yeah, all the time. We got together because of our love and passion for business. We, you know, I was always doing the man with the van thing, but Kat had a fairly good job, and I was the one who sort of said, you've got this amazing job that you've worked your entire life for. And as soon as I sort of met her, I was like, you should quit that job and come and work for me for free. you know, like, I can't afford to pay you, but you'll enjoy it more. She was very stressed. And I think she agrees that it was sort of like the best move. She had a business entrepreneurial mind from day one as well. And so that's generally what we talk about all the time. But we love it. As I say before, like, it's not work. We really enjoy what we do. So the only thing is making sure we give enough focus to our little baby. Winston was fine, you know, but yeah. We've got a 2-year-old who loves trains and just wants to watch trains all the time, play with his trains. So we can't be talking shop too much around him.
No. I've got to ask, does he have a little toy van, a Your Man with a Van? Do you have any merch with Your Man with a Van on the branding?
He has the outfits for marketing purposes, yes. But he doesn't have any toys so much. No, he's just obsessed with Brio at the moment. So
yes, yeah,
he's just sounds a train mad. Yeah,
I want to ask you before we go into, you know, your motivational quote and asking me a question is, how do you foster a positive team spirit with your franchisees? So what are the things that you do? Because what's coming out to me loud and clear in this interview, you made the comment that I work for them, they're my boss.
Yeah, yeah.
I've never heard a franchisor say that. And believe you me, I used to go to all the big shows and I used to speak even at the BFA, British Franchise Association conferences. I've never heard a franchisor speak in that manner. So it's what's coming through to me loud and clear is how you actually want to support your network. But how do you foster that positive team spirit with them?
I guess being proactive. I mean, because bearing in mind that someone who joins our franchise, who starts this business, they want to be in business, they want to be their own boss, but they want the support that comes with it. And so that's what they've joined. They want something which is support led. So we're proactively supporting them because sometimes they feel like they don't want to waste our time. So they assume that we're really busy, which we are. But that doesn't mean that we can't help them. I mean, you know, if you want something done, ask a busy person.
Yes.
We want them to call us. We want them to send support tickets. We want them to say, what do you need next? Like, we want them to do well. Quite often, they feel bad for contacting us, like they're wasting our time. So we just make a point of just proactively messaging, calling every single day of the week. You know, it might be that we don't, because the network is large enough, 65 branches, we might not speak to someone for 2 weeks, but we have the group every morning. How's everyone doing? Something exciting to share. Get the conversation going. People start sharing pictures. People start saying good morning to each other, which is great. Some branches more active than others, but we're just proactively going out to make sure that they're okay. We want to make sure they succeed, and you know, it's in our interest too, right? I mean, if they're not happy, they're just going to leave, so
yes,
we need to make sure that they're happy.
I listen to it and I'm nodding my head. I think I'm exactly the same. I just launched print magazine and I've got all these advertisers and they're like my children. I'm sort of like looking after them. We've edited their work. We're here if they want to chat. We're putting on a free networking event for them. And I just love that. And I think you've got to be that kind of person that genuinely likes being with people and seeing people thrive. Because if you are, you will do all that. You will create all these fabulous initiatives. And it sounds to me that you're nurturing this group of people so that they know that you're always in their corner. And how enriching and wonderful is that you're able to take that view? It sounds like I see it in Kat, that's naturally, this is the first time that you and I have spoken, ironically, and I just I kept hearing about you, obviously, from Kat, but I just love the fact that this just is so natural to you. You're not having to force it.
No, I mean, that when if someone inquires about it and I'm talking to them, I'm not selling it, just telling them the honest truth.
And
if they want to be part of that, great. If they don't, then, you know, and I love being able to say at the end of a prospect call, If you're not sure, call every single one.
Oh, wow.
I am happy to put my hand on heart and say everyone will sing our praises, because it's win-win. Our success, their success, it's all the same picture. You know, and I'm not afraid to put everything on the line to say that we're doing our best to make sure that our branches succeed.
I love it. Well, how wonderful is that? And so we're at the stage of the show now where you share your motivational quote, and then you've got a question that you're going to ask me. So fire away.
I think this it goes without saying, surround yourself with the people that want to see you win.
Oh, I like that. I like that. And that applies to your franchisees as well, because you're part of that, aren't you?
Yeah. I want to see them win. They want to see me win. You know, we are making our collective community have that attitude that their success is ours and ours is theirs. You know,
Wonderful. And what is your question for me, Dan?
I have so many, but I think if I was starting out, I think that's the biggest one. If I was starting from the very beginning and I had no idea about business, what would be your like wise wisdom words, if you like? I've not phrased that particularly well, but if I was starting from scratch and I had absolutely no idea what I was doing, I may be 16, just left school, and I want to go and be my own boss. Doesn't really matter what field, but I want to be my own boss. What would be a marketer's like best bit of advice?
I think I always say is that you can do this on your own, but I would say start out by writing down every single thing that you're going to offer and why you're going to offer it. Then look at it and say, okay, where in that list is the core? What am I going to initially focus on? Because it's tempting to want to do a myriad of different things which can really drive you scatty. So get it all out, do that big old mind dump, however you collate your thoughts and your notes, review it, then look at what is my core, what am I really going to focus on? And I would then just align that really closely with, and who are the people that I'm going to be selling to? And I talk about this, I'm speaking at an event in a few days' time, actually, when I'll be talking about defining your target audiences, the people, the starving crowds that have got the biggest need and the biggest desire to buy from you. So go into real granular research, none of this highfalutin marketing theory. Let's just say you said, I want to talk to, I don't know, gardeners, landscapers. It's where, in what district, what size. So give you a really good understanding of who your target audiences are, then say, where's the low-hanging fruit, the ones that I should go for immediately that give me confidence, and then map out barriers and benefits. So what's standing in the way of that group wanting to come to me? It might be, oh, they're new, will I trust them? You need to look at what are the different barriers that are going to be presented, so you can look at how you're going to overcome them. Then look at the benefits that you're offering. And a really big thing using AI is look at what's going on in that person, that target group's landscape that will really influence the take-up of my services or not. And that's when we look at research. I've done it in the automotive aftermarket. I have built global campaigns in 39 countries where I've just started out by saying, what's going on globally when it comes to motorists having their vehicle serviced, motorists paying for repairs? And I launched global campaigns on the back of understanding from research. Motorists aren't taking their cars to a garage as frequently. Motorists are often putting off having repairs done because of the cost of the repair. And on the back of that research, I have built the most amazing campaigns that have gone on for years. Now, what I'm sharing there, you don't have to be a marketer, but you do have to have what I call the marketing mindset. And you've asked me a question that I could sit and chat for hours about, but I'm well aware that I don't have hours, that we're almost at the time for us to say farewell. But that is my immediate top of head response, and I have to cut short by several hours. How does that sound to you?
No, perfect. Thank you very much. So hopefully it's inspired some people.
Yeah, I hope so. I hope so. And Dan, I mean, our time has come to a close today. I have loved every minute of hearing about your man with a van, your vision from being a young man with a van. That's it, young man with a van to your man with a van. Mm-hmm. I've loved hearing about it, and I wish you and Kat lots of success. And please pat Winston on the head for me and say Dee says hello. And thank you for joining us today.
My pleasure.
What a lovely interview that was with Dan, the co-founder of Your Man with a Van. And what would I like you to take away from today? Because I'm sure your head is buzzing with lots of ideas. I think the one thing that came out for me is doing something that's pretty straightforward, but doing it brilliantly. So I would encourage you, if you've got a burning ambition for a business, is what's the simple idea that's going to really take root? And how can you do it so that you stand out as being a bit of a positive disruptor? Because what Dan wanted to do was, as he said, was to gentrify the whole removal sector. How can you do something like this if you're going into a particular sector? How can you be positively disruptive? What can you do to really stand your ground? And the other thing as well is that you often don't need to have lots of expensive, highfalutin consultants if you're really passionate about what you are doing. So I really hope that you've enjoyed today's show as much as me. And my usual sign off, which if you're a regular, you'll know, is that I encourage you to stand in your circle of power. Really get both feet in it. Let your feet feel the ground beneath you and just embrace all the good things, because you are so deserving of great things and good things. And always remember that beyond that door marked fear is courage and opportunity and lots of untapped potential and great stories yet to come. So that's me, Dee Blick, signing off from Lead Well, Live Well, and I'll really look forward to catching up with you next week. You've been listening to Lead Well, Live Well on UK Health Radio.